started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick. At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, about 10 minutes in. Jay Privman standing by, and Priv, it's like we're at Santa Anita. Hammer's sitting right here with me. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent, Hammer.
Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Hammer. You're like that old "Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?" Like nobody knows where you'll be.
That's very true. I'm sorry that I missed you last week. But we've set a future date,
yes,
to be determined.
I will look forward to that.
Well, that's right. You'll have one more go around.
Absolutely.
Right.
After I get done here, I'll go back.
Well, Jay, I don't know if you heard earlier, but before the show started,
I had the nicest
conversation with Bill Strauss, who it feels like he's been here the whole meet. I've run into him like three times, and of course, waiting for Hot Rod Charlie tomorrow.
Yeah, Bill's a good man. I've known him a long time, and back from when he had part of Turbulent Descent, who came into Saratoga and did well there. So glad he's got another really
great
top horse in Hot Rod Charlie, and that race tomorrow is tremendous.
I remember Pipey, right? Pipey.
Yep.
With Turbulent.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because it's funny, I remember, Hammer, you may not remember this, but I was on the phone with you by the barbecue as Pipey was going back this way, and I flagged him down. And I said, "Mike," I said, "I got Hammer here," and passed you the phone, and you congratulated him. It was the Ballerina, I think.
I think it was a big race, whatever
yeah.
it was. Yes,
yeah,
I
yeah,
do
yeah.
that. Because Mike does not travel too often.
No, I was like, it was just kind of funny. That popped in my head. Jay, obviously, you get a weekend like this here with Whitney. It's a big focus. But you've got the Grade One, the fillies and mares with the Clement Hirsch. Certainly a one of the real highlights of the summer at Del Mar.
Right, and it's a win and you're into the distaff, as it was last year when She Dares the Devil won and got a free roll in the distaff, and she's back to try and do it again. This will be her fourth start of the year, and she's just made good, steady progress in her three previous races, most recently winning the Fleur de Lis, and she seems to have shipped in here well. But, this race came up, it's a pretty good race. You've got Private Mission and Blue Stripe, who both ran strongly in the Santa Maria last time out, and Blue Stripe had won the Santa Margarita prior to that, and Hector Berrios is going to take over on her. And then Desert Dawn is going to try the Elders for the first time. She ran super in the Kentucky Oaks when finishing third to Secret Oath and Nest. And then she was just eliminated at the start last time in the Summertime Oaks. It says stumbled badly in the little comments, and it was all that. And she actually stumbled a couple of times leaving the gate, and so that's a throwout race. And the other horse in here is really interesting, is Soothsay, because she's getting thrown into the deep end of the pool off of a 13-month layoff. But Mandela, who's not one to speak in hyperbole, said that she's just done. She took her to this race, took him to this race, I should say, because of the way that she's, how strongly she's trained. He didn't expect her to be ready for this, but he said she's just trained so well, she's earned her way in. So it's a really good race, even for just a seven-horse field. And it's, seven-horse fields here are a rarity. The racing office has just been hitting it out of the park here.
Big time. It's been a big part of, you know, big part of the summer conversation is how, and how strong business has been on both coasts. Always encouraging. Jay, I'm going to use that race, the Clement Hirsch, as kind of a segue or sideways opportunity for you to talk about Beholder and Teppan as part of the Hall of Fame induction, which is going to start here in the next 15 minutes. Beholder basically, held sway not just in California, but a pretty special day for two special mares.
Certainly so. And I mean, if you look at Beholder's record in particular, I mean, I maintain that her record stacks up with any all-time great older filly or mare you could imagine in terms of the scope of accomplishments of grade one wins at and Eclipse Awards and victories at every eight, grade one wins every year she was on the track from 2 through 6, five straight years. The quality of the races that she ran in, the quality of the competition that she beat, to maintain that level of excellence for that long is a remarkable achievement. And, she was certainly a slam dunk to go in. And Teppan's record, it was interesting to just watch her story arc because she was just kind of a moderate horse early on in her career when she was on dirt. But obviously once they switched her over to grass, she just went to a whole new level, and her win in the Breeders' Cup Mile, and most significantly for me, when she went over to Royal Ascot and won there and won the Queen Anne. I mean, those are amazing performances, and to do that two different seasons, she is certainly deserving as well. So those are two recent runners that we were fortunate to see, and both deserving of enshrinement today.
As you said that, and I think back to Teppan's career, she in sort of a weird, there's something of an equivalent. She's sort of a female cigar in the inverse. When she went to grass as opposed to cigar going to the dirt.
Yeah, in some ways, the cigar ran more often, but certainly he traveled all over the world, winning the first Dubai World Cup, and Teppan traveled over to Royal Ascot. So yeah, there's definitely some thematic commonalities there.
Should mention with Beholder too, and she broke her maiden at Del Mar. She won a Clement Hirsch, and it should be noted, Jay, that she had a couple of different incidents that Mandela, right, had to sort of nurse her back from when she came here and she caught herself and got kicked and took a bad gash and she, it's not like there wasn't a straw in the path of her career.
No, not at all. I mean, she had a meltdown going to the post for the Kentucky Oaks that year. I mean, she wanted to almost sit down on her hindquarters, I remember, under Garrett Gomez, and then, like you said, she got injured, and that was in the Ogden Phipps at Belmont Park when the gash happened. And then you might remember she was going to run in the Breeders' Cup Classic against American Pharoah and got sick that week at Keeneland. But because of that, they ended up keeping her in training for another year. And we got to marvel at her again as a six-year-old and completing her career with that memorable distaff against Songbird at Santa Anita. So, yeah, you're right. She was not easy to train. She had to be, like, for instance, when we were down here at Del Mar, she was in an outdoor pen, which they don't have the luxury of having those at Santa Anita, but they do at Del Mar, and she was much more comfortable in an outdoor pen just owing to her personality. And she was a tough mare to be around, but, boy, she could run. Boy.
Boy, Jay, I'm so glad you mentioned her longevity, and that she was able to just do this over the length of time that she did. And correct me if I'm wrong, but if you could have hand-picked a trainer for her, you couldn't have picked anyone better than Richard Mandela. Well, there's a lot of great trainers out there, but he just fit her like a glove. I don't know. He did. He just knew when to zig and zag, and like you guys mentioned, a couple of bumps along the way. he didn't panic. He knew exactly what to do, and gave her the time, and she just came back every year. Just, she was tremendous. I look at these two, and I can imagine you, because I know you're a big part of the Hall of Fame selections and everything that goes on. When horses like this move up into the nominating time, and you're thinking about a Teppan and a Beholder, I'm sure you're going, first ballot. I mean, it's not even a question of these horses. And for me, one I watched on TV most of the time, and one I saw probably, you know, every race but two. And obviously, Beholder was one of the ones that was the one that I got to see most of all. And it was a pleasure to watch her run. I mean, I'm happy for that team and for that to happen. And actually, one of the last races that I got to name, it was when you switched
the Beholder Mile.
We switched the distance, and then we had the opportunity to change the name. And I remember going to Keith Brackwell. I go, this is the perfect time. Boom, let's do it. And so now it's the Beholder Mile, and definitely fitting for sure.
The only
she was terrific.
The only disappointment, of course, we'll mention, and it just was about a year ago, the next couple of weeks, the only disappointment is that B. Wayne Hughes can't be here to enjoy this, certainly Ned Toffee and the team will be on hand this morning. And, you know, Jay, one thing, I went and pulled up the... you know, the Hall of Fame mailing kit, which includes the career past performances. I had forgotten that lead up to the Distaff win, where California Chrome, you know, beat her handily, and he was favored in the Pacific Classic, and Stellar Wind had beaten her twice. She was on a three race losing scheme going into that Distaff.
Right, and then she. I remember her last work. I remember watching it because it was kind of a poignant scene, because you mentioning Wayne Hughes. You know, all the Spendthrift people were there. Mandela standing on the apron at Santa Anita, watching that final breeze, like 5 or 6 days or so before the distaff. And she trained great. I mean, you could see that she was going to fire. It was just a matter of was she still good enough? And obviously, she was on the day. And you mentioned that Pacific Classic. I mean, that was a performance, even though she was handily beaten by California Chrome, she was well in front of everybody else, and most years that would have been a winning performance, as it was for her the previous year when she just obliterated the horses that she was in against in the previous year's Pacific Classic.
That's right.
Just, if you get a chance to fire that up on the on YouTube or something later, the move that she makes at the three ace pole under Gary Stevens is just breathtaking. She just pulverizes those horses in a matter of a furlong at 3/8 out, and just turns the race into a romp.
Beholder and Teppan, and I will just, as a, you know, as a correspondent, you know, media type, I'll mention. I mean, I got to see the two of them. Was treated so many times to being able to see them and you know, and discuss them, obviously, with Mark Cassie and with Mandela and with and Julian Leperoux and Stevens and just a treat. And it's there's a certain nice harmony. I mean, obviously, Jay, there were some horses and potential trainers and jocks that you know, have got rebuffed in this year's voting, but if you were gonna have two inductees of the equine set, to have these two go in together is kind of nice. A great turf mare and one of the great distaffers of all time as well.
Absolutely, no, they're most deserving. Like you said, there were a couple others who I thought could have made it, should have made it, didn't make it, but hopefully next year for Kona Gold.
We should also mention, from the historic side, Hillsdale and Royal Heroine and trainer Oscar White. That was the historic review committee. James Cox Brady, as well as Marshall Cassidy. James Van Ally Hagen, and those were your pillars that round out the eight that go into the hall right about now. Jay, a couple of other thoughts. I hinted at some Breeders' Cup Classic overtones toward the handicap group, and some thoughts maybe about tomorrow's Whitney.
It's a terrific race. I mean, we referenced that right at the top. I mean, you couldn't ask for, you know, better group back there with, you know, Olympiad and Life is Good and Hot Rod Charlie. I mean, it's just, you know, the American Revolution. I mean, just the cream of the crop is in that field, you know, outside of what there is out here that ran pretty much, you know, in the San Diego last week minus flight line. It's a terrific race. And I'm really looking forward to watching it. And it's the right distance too. I think it's the right distance for a fair fight between Life is Good and Olympiad in particular. You know, it's not too short where, you know, a mile where it might favor one or a mile and a quarter where it might favor the other. I mean, it's the sweet spot, for, I think, a really good matchup.
The Whitney and the Pacific Classic, the counterpart, as the handicap division takes shape toward the Breeders' Cup Classic. And, of course, the three-year-olds doing what they're going to do for another couple of months between Travers and Pennsylvania Derby. Jay, I know you did a couple of other advances. Anything else that any interesting horses that you got your eye on that we should know about, the real good deal and such today, tomorrow?
I mean, the real good deal today is actually a really a well above average cowbred stake. You've got nine entered and seven of them are stakes winners, three of them against open company, including, you know, like Slow Down Andy, who won the Los Alamitos Futurity last fall, and Straight Up G, who's making his first start for Pipey, where we started off talking about with Turbulent Descent. He's taken over for Baltus and gelded the horse since his last start, and obviously, you know, the wheels came off the bus in the Sunland Derby, but he's trained well coming back for this race. And you've got Big City Lights for Mandela, first start for Mandela coming off of a long way off, and he was the fastest and most precocious two-year-old in California early on last year, and I'm interested to see how he comes back. He's trained extremely well for his comeback. But one last thing, just regarding Mandela, we were talking about how close he was with Beholder. You know, he was most eager to go to the Hall of Fame this year for that. But unfortunately, he hasn't been able to travel. He came down with a mild case of COVID, and he's back at work. But it's just not, just timing-wise, he just couldn't, you know, he wasn't well enough to be getting on a plane and traveling to Saratoga. And it's really, I saw him yesterday, and he's really bummed out about it. He really wanted to be back there for it. So, unfortunately, he'll be watching from his barn at Del Mar instead.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, Jay, we appreciate it. We got Thoroughbred LA tomorrow. Any special guests?
No, it's the usual cast of characters. We'll preview the weekend. There's, you know, this time of year, there's plenty of stuff to talk about with all the meaty racing going on at Del Mar, and certainly, you know, we'll be bringing in people from the East to talk about the great card at Saratoga tomorrow, including the Whitney. So it should be a fun morning.
Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman, Hammer.
One quick thing, just a little flashback. I threw up a picture this week on Twitter that I had found in the garage, a little snapshot of the 1979 Hollywood Gold Cup. And I was standing towards the top of the stretch with Firm, Sir Ladd, and Tex head and head. And Jay commented that he was there that day as well. And I don't know about you, Jay, when I pulled that thing up, all this flood of memories came back of, you know, Hollywood Park and Affirmed and the crowds. And you mentioned that she carried 132 pounds that day. And it was, you know, it was a couple other people there. Bob Icke also commented that they were there that day. So I thought that was, you never know what's going to hit out there, but a ton of reaction for the photo. And just, of course, probably because it was Affirmed. But I was glad to know that you were also in the crowd there that day. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I remember he carried 132. They gave out a button that I saw Affirmed, which I still have in my collection of goodies here. And, you know, I also remember that victory made him the first horse to earn $2 million. How quaint when you think about what horses run for today. He became the first horse ever to win more than $2 million with that victory in that Gold Cup.
Hey, how about that? And actually, that race Citation won the first million, was the first $1 million horse in that. But yeah, they gave out the gold pin, and I hadn't realized that until somebody put it on the Twitter. And I, you know what? I remember getting there late that day, but I had to make the race, and I probably parked at the Forum and walked a mile to get over there. And the reason that photo is what. Yeah, right? The reason that photo is where it is because that's how far I could get in. It was so many people that I couldn't even get down towards the finish line. And right? And so that photo's so eerie because there's no signs, there's no people, there's nothing in the background that would, you know, even tell you where you were unless you knew. And you just, there's just three horses here, and it was just so cool that they were head to head to head. And that's as far as I got in. That's why the picture was there. If I was at the finish line, I would have had a finish line picture. But pretty wild.
That's great. I saw that. That got tremendous because you tagged me, and I really enjoyed the commentary that came out of it. Very cool. As we wrap with Jay Bridman, should mention the 1 2-year-old race tomorrow. The 2-year-old boy is going 5 furlongs in the 5th race, and just a couple of interesting horses. The 8 for John Sadler, Hawker as a half to commissioner, and I noticed Dr. Soulfire for Michael W. McCarthy, 5-1. The 4 it happens to be a half to In the Midst of Biz, who was a nice stake horse. So everything you'd want at Del Mar, the nice fields, the 2-year-olds, the stake action, the Hirsch. Jay, enjoy the weekend. We'll catch up next week. DRF Pridman, everybody. And there you go. Del Mar, right. Del Mar's weekend. Did not actually watch a lot yesterday of the Del Mar after we wrapped up Saratoga. But today, that real good deal does look fun.
Do they still do the carousel? It used to be the carousel over here.
Carousel's one over.
They had the races there. After the races, you could go down there and
the replay center.
No, you catch the last few at Del Mar. Do they still
simulcast
down there?
Up until 7 o'clock. Up until 7.
So that gets you to like the 5th race
or
something.
Let's see. Today, for instance,
today's Friday, so
right,
they start late.
Today's 5th. Oh, that's right. They've got. So they don't start till 7 o'clock.
Where's the spot to go in town? Do they have a spot you can bet, gamble in town, and you know, like an OTB type place in town?
The Harness Track.
Oh, that's right. I like that. Shake the money tree.
You go to the Harness Track. That's an option. It used to be, you know, when we ran on Mondays, that was fun. When it would typically be a quiet 9-day, you know, 9-race card on Mondays, and then Del Mar would come on afterward on the Mondays. And there was also, what other day was it? Was it Wednesday? That maybe Arlington or something? We used to, you know, because back by the barbecue, we could, you know, and the main line, you could bet the main line. Until 7 o'clock, and in fact, that's coming into play this weekend with the Hambo Hambletonian. And in fact, Chuck is going to join us. We're going to call Chuck Simon in a little bit and get Chuck's Hambo plays. He's not coming over till a little bit later today. Chuck was out late last night. He went to the jockey trainer basketball game, the fundraiser, which has now become. It used to be competitive. Now the jockeys just drilled. The trainers are hapless. And in fact, Coach Pletcher is there's rumors that Coach Pletcher may not be behind the bench next year.
Well, could be on the waiver wires. Huh?
It could be. I mean, and
you might have to go from the bench to the court.
I don't know. He used to be. He even asked Chuck if Chuck could give him a good 5-6 minutes, and Chuck
set a few screens. Maybe
Chuck said he could maybe go out for one shift, like a hockey player.
So let me get this straight. Chuck is recovering from a basketball game.
Well, from watching a basketball game. He was out till 11:30. He said, which for him is very late. Although he's that's nonsense. I've stayed at times with Chuck, and he's up all night long. He's like a vampire. Scott Shapiro is standing by, and Shap, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good to talk. And yeah, I've done a couple of those Saratoga race course to the Harness Track for Del Mar doubleheaders in my day. So sounds like a lot of fun. But I hope everybody's well.
Everything good here. We got one of our first significant storms yesterday, but other than some trees down between here and Schuylerville, we did okay. We didn't have an incident. We didn't have turf. Races taken off in the midst of everything.
Right.
So it worked out okay.
Good. Good to hear. Exciting weekend ahead.
Jump in, Scott, and let's get some thoughts.
Yeah, looking forward to tomorrow's card at Del Mar, not only the Clement L. Hirsch and the California Dreamin', but also a mandatory payout in the Rainbow Six, the first of three scheduled ones. It's a pretty good sequence that I think is worth attacking, as it usually is with the free money in there. But, I can start out. Let's talk a little bit about that fifth race that you touched on real quickly with before letting Jay go. And the two horses you mentioned are the two I'm most interested in. I picked Hawker, who, as you mentioned, is a half the commissioner, who obviously finished second in 2014 Belmont. Also a half to Intrepid Heart, a horse that resurrected his career, was a Todd Fletcher runner, and then really has been a hard knocker here in Kentucky as a high-level claiming horse. And, being by Justify, who's been killing it thus far, makes this one pretty attractive. Maybe we'll want a little more ground in the M, but if anywhere near 8-1, I think worth consideration. And then you mentioned Dr. Soulfire, who's a half to In the Midst of Biz, who won on debut at Fairgrounds and ended up, won the TCOA one year at Keeneland, earned $344,000. And Michael McCarthy doesn't sport great numbers with firsters, but it does appear to me that he's, like some of these other trainers seeing the big maiden special weight purses around, maybe working towards cranking his runners a little bit more for their first start. This horse looks pretty live on debut at 5-1. And then Mr. Iceman, pretty interesting as a horse with experience, was kind of ran into a good field. The 6-5 Florida bred favorite for Bob Baffert won that day. Dillinger, the other Bob Baffert, finished third. So splitting them, showing early speed for Peter Miller, who's beginning to heat up. An interesting option, but I did land on number 8 Hawker in a fun race to close the early horizontal wagers.
That's interesting. I mean, because we have not talked, obviously, and I just was, just as I do regularly, kind of pulling out pedigrees for people to take note of, and land on your pair. Of course, Mr. Iceman as well, with the advantage of having made a start, so there's some of that, and the majority, what do we have, one, two, three, four, five, so half the field making a first start. There's also a Baffert that's on the AE, that Nullabar, which I think is an Australian, that's Australian, it's a reference to something in Australia. Okay?
Is it Australian for beer, mate?
That's Foster.
Oh,
Kieran. Kieran McLaughlin also partly responsible for the trainer's terrible play on the basketball court. We're gonna have to get Kieran over here for some explanation.
He's not even an assistant coach, is it?
Yes. Oh. Yeah. He was like Shep Woolley in Hoosiers, the coach, the assistant coach sitting on the bench. Speaking of Shep Woolley, I was somewhere, Tina and I travels, we drove somewhere through a town that Shep Woolley was from.
Oh, really?
Now, I meant to tweet that, actually, when we were driving on Route 66. It's very funny, and I thought, he also sang, and Shep Woolley was very cool. All right, I'm sorry, I hijacked you, Shep. Go ahead.
No problem. Enjoying the banter. The sixth race starts at Rainbow Six. And I think number 6, 3.0 is a very intriguing option in here. Edward Freeman, always good numbers at Del Mar. Last 194 starts, 251 ROI. This one is a full to 4-6 figure earner as a daughter of Square Eddie. And the turf is probably not going to be an issue. I do like the cutback. And she ran into a very, very good group of state-bred maidens on the dirt when we last saw her at Santa Anita. The winner of that race was Fun the Dream, who came back and crushed them. The stakes foe was last week for Bob Baffert. The runner-up that day was handled by Fun to Dream, came back to win by 7 lengths herself. I don't think 3.0, while on paper, she faces an equal field here of cowbred protected maidens. I don't think there's anyone of that caliber 14 here. She should get a nice prominent spot under Mary Gutierrez. I think 3.0 makes a lot of sense at 5-1. Otherwise, a pretty wide open race. Should be an honest pace, though.
Very good.
Let's see here. The seventh, real quick, so, you know, no big play here, but I do think a lot of people are going to end up leaning on number 8, Carnivore. Understandable, 8-5, morning line favorite. First start off the claim for Diodoro. Two real good races in Louisville this year for the level. The maiden breaking performance came against what I thought was one of the better $20,000 maiden claiming fields we had in Louisville, and then ran well in the subsequent start, cutting back to the one-turn mile. Now, this horse on paper should win the race, but this horse was entered in a $50,000 starter allowance event on July 22nd here at Del Mar, scratched out of that race, and now appears for 16. Now, we know Diodoro very, very willing to drop off the claim, has some of the better numbers you'll see doing so, but that's a little bit of a red flag here. I just don't see why the big drop for 16 when the goal, it looked like, was to protect this one in the first start out there. So just something to keep in mind. I landed on Egomania as a lukewarm top pick, and I'm not going to be all in with Carnivore in the pick 6 in the 7th.
Well, and economical and Egomania next to each other, and so I hope their silks are different, so it doesn't give Trevor a headache.
Those are the other two I'm going to use. I think economical will be loose on the lead on the class drop likely, and Egomaniac gelded drops in class for the dirt. So I'm going to go 3 deep in there.
All right.
Yeah, the 8th is very competitive. I landed on Ice Queen as a lukewarm long shot top pick, but no strong opinion. And then the Clemenel Hurst, I think it's going to be very tough to beat Cheetair as a double. We know she handles the surface out there, which can often be a question, especially without a work over it. She did it last year in the Clemenel Hurst, of course, and got a little bit of a confidence booster sitting just off the pace in the Fleur-de-Lis instead of being on the lead where she lost as the favorite in 2 starts to start the year. Desert Dawn and Soothsay, as Jay mentioned before me, it is very intriguing that Soothsay appears in a grade 1 after a 13-month layoff and just a neck win in the Indiana Oaks, although that doesn't really tell the story. She got off to an absolutely horrible start. She's going to have to run huge off a long layoff to win this race, but I definitely found it, like Jay said, intriguing and good to hear his information that Richard Mandela, as you would suspect, got taken into this spot by the 4-year-old daughter of Distorted Humor and isn't forcing the issue. She's an underneath candidate. And Desert Dawn, I mean, in terms of a thoroughgraph pattern, in terms of a lot of things, it's obviously a step up taking on Olders in this spot. But as Jay mentioned, you can absolutely toss the Summertime Oaks and the Santa Anita Oaks and, of course, the Kentucky Oaks were really big steps forward for this daughter of Cupid. And like She Dares the Devil, she's run well over this racetrack. So I could see doubling up with She Dares the Devil and Desert Dawn, but on an economical budget, I'll be single and She Dares the Devil.
How much is Private Mission? What's her, where is she? There's 5-2. All right. Well, this is a tough scenario. I mean, I happen to be a big Blue Stripe fan, and I, you know, curious. She's gonna have to take another.
She needs to step forward.
So, all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think that highly of that race. I suspect that, you know, She Dares the Devil will be better than those two, but, you know, it doesn't have to be. And Blue Stripe should be a good price, and Horizontals will be a bit of a separator, even though it's just 4-1 on the line. California Dreamin', wish I was doing some of that myself, but mile and a 16th on the turf. I think the pace will be honest. Some interesting returnees in here. The Chosen Bron, who was great to start his career for Eric Koljak, hasn't been on the turf in his career, hasn't been to the races since last November, kind of a wild card favorite. Hockey Dad returns to the turf. There's two horses I'm interested in, though, more. None Above the Law, who won the Del Mar Derby last year, and should get a favorable mid-pack voyage under Florent Giroux. That was who I landed on as a top pick. But Tom Surprise is a horse that I'm going to refuse to leave off. First start off the claim for Andy Mathis, who dipped in for 62.5 at Pleasanton on July 3rd. The race before that at Golden Gate on going a mile on the turf, tremendous turn of foot. Now, it remains to be seen if this Son of Tom's Tribute can get the right race shape to set up a last-to-first type effort. But if they go at it, and Armando Ayuso is looking for his first win of the meet and save ground, Tom Surprise could spring the upset here. 10 wins in 25 starts, certainly noteworthy.
There you go. All right. 10-1 on the four, Tom Surprise in that Cal Dreamin'. I said Jay wrote it, but I guess it was Steve Anderson maybe that got the quote about the toughest cowbred race ever.
Really?
Cal Dreamin'. Yeah, I forget who said it now. I must have read it Wednesday or Thursday, and I thought it was Jay, but I think Steve, maybe it might even been Brad that did the advance. I don't know. But they said that this was super competitive.
It is. It is a competitive race.
It was, and you know, I had Bill Strauss here earlier, and Bill was talking about his horse in here, which I guess is Hockey Dad.
Yeah, Hockey Dad has to take a step forward now, but certainly has run good races on the turf, and he was. I picked him for fourth. I think he makes sense, and you know, if I'm going four deep, I'm using him. Probably going to be the second choice.
All right, what else you got?
And that's about it on that card. And a couple of quick ones for today. First race is a maiden special weight event, 5 furlongs on the turf. And I'm going to go with number 8, Pat a Wallop. Crazy creative spelling. Comes in from Gulfstream, heavily backed on debut, 7-5 favorite there over the flop, and just never took to that racetrack. But they spent $270,000 for a creative cause. He stands for just $7,500. Now they get the ship and win bonus. I think the turf will work out fine. I like Pax a Wallop in the opener. And then in race 3, another turf sprint, I like number 2, Air Force Red, in a competitive high-level optional claimer that looks like it'll be a prep for the Green Flash, which comes a little later in the meet than it has in the past, the first week of September. I think Air Force Red is primed for a pocket trip win for Lenny Powell and Juan Hernandez. And just to mention the promotions that we got at Twin Spires before you let me go, Steve. The Exacta Insurance this week returns to Del Mar on Saturday. The races are 4, 8, and 10. You get your you get insurance at the Exacta. You bet the Exacta in the wrong order. And then the Saratoga bet back continues up to $10 back on your win bet if your horse finishes second. Eligible races today at Saratoga, 5, 6, 8, and 10. And tomorrow, 5, 6, 8, and 11.
Excellent. Scott Shapiro, everybody, and Hammer.
Hey, Scott, one quick thing. I love the way you break down these races. But real quick, last year on the turf sprints at Del Mar, if you weren't 1, 2, 3, you had no shot. Have you noticed, I haven't been keeping track, but has that been prevalent so far this year in the meet? I know we've only been, you know, 8 or 9 days, but have you seen that trend at all come back?
Well, once the rails have come out, it's been advantageous to be there. The sample size is small. They'll be back in tomorrow at 12 or 18, not quite the 30. I think it's 18 tomorrow. It hasn't been quite as pronounced, Hammer, with the limited sample. I remember that being crazy last year. But once those rails are out, sprints and routes, to me, you want to be along the inside or up close or else you're up against it. But not quite as pronounced as last year thus far.
Thanks a lot. Oh, you guys, you're the greatest. Love to listen to you break a race down. So we'll see you soon,
Hammer.
Somewhere down the road,
yeah.
I hope.
Yeah, I hope so, too. It's great to hear your voice. Greg, glad you're on tonight.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Schapp, 34. Let's stay right here. We got about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and we will have the counterpart, James Scully, going to join us between now and the top of the hour. And speaking of counterparts, Jimmy Ventura has arrived. And not only did he arrive, he has brought the Boringer Weimer Bakery from Hackensack, the famous crumb cake. It's mostly crumb, very little cake. For those of you that have never had the B&W Bakery, the famous crumb cake, it's here.
Let me tell you a story about B&W. So the first time, we're talking late 1989, first time I'm back here, meet Jimmy, we become friends. Why don't you come up for, you know, a Sunday dinner? Yeah, okay, sure. So we come up, and it's like 9 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't know. He goes, well, what are we doing? He goes, well, we got to go get the crumb cake and the sausage bread. I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. We proceed to take a drive to Hackensack, which is not that far from where his mom's house in Maywood. And we park, and I go, oh, what's going on over there? It's like a movie preview or something. What's going on? It's a line around the block.
Uh-huh.
He goes, that's the line we're getting into. I'm like, are you crazy? And we proceed to wait 45 minutes to an hour to get into this little B&W bakery and walk out with a crumb cake and a sausage bread. And to this day, guess what? Now I'm in Hackensack, I'm going to go wait in line. They don't have that stuff in California. You know, the Helms truck would come by and you'd go buy a donut as he went by. That's about as long as you waited for a bread and a thing. So yesterday, I got here and I went in to see Elise, who's the Horseman's Relations gal.
Jacobs.
Elise. So she's great. And so last year I promised her, you know, a crumb cake. So I made I promised her to bring a crumb cake. So anyway, I went out and got a sandwich before I got here, and it was at Roma's Deli over there, and they had a little, like a 3-inch square of a crumb cake, right? So I brought it into her and I give it to her, and she's like, what is this? And I go, oh, here's a crumb cake. And I said, don't worry.
Jimmy's coming.
It's just a tease. The real one's coming tomorrow. So Jimmy dropped one here, but he also dropped one up there.
Always.
And
he's been bringing it for years.
So there's a picture.
That's funny.
So she was very disappointed, but she knew when Jimmy was coming into the picture. But if you are anywhere near B&W Bakery, you got to get the crumb cake there. And they have, like I said, sausage bread. I've never seen anything like this sausage bread that they make there. I've never seen it anywhere else.
I'd like to know more about that, actually.
Jimmy will fill you in.
All right.
It's just baked with sausage in it. It's just incredible.
I like the sound of that. And, of course, they, you know, in New Orleans, during Mardi Gras, with the way they line up at, like, Gambino's to get the king cake.
Yeah.
Same thing. Lined up. When I left New Orleans to come to Oakland last year, I stopped at Gambino. I remember I brought the king cake, and I gave you the big one, the giant one, to bring into the office at Oakland, and they knew right away. They were excited.
Yeah. They knew it wasn't a fake.
They knew
it was the real deal.
Yeah, this wasn't from Kroger.
Right.
This was this was from NOLA. James Scully is standing by. Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Hammer. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning.
James, let's dive in. Got about 10 minutes for you to pick out the plays, and I know you looked at Mountaineer, among others.
She races at Mountaineer. They got their big all-state West Virginia Derby card. I'll just start in race number three. I think there's a potentially vulnerable favorite in there. And I like number nine, Thundering Creed. He came back this winter with back-to-back wins for Michael Tomlinson. Got a little bit of a ran well at Keeneland, twice on the main track at Churchill Downs. Got a little bit of a freshening in advance of this race, and looks poised to really, I think, run well on tomorrow off of his last two efforts for Michael Tomlinson, number nine, Thundering Creed, in the third race.
Well, and you mentioned a vulnerable favorite, and I guess you mean Kaylee's sister, the filly of Brad Cox.
Yes, yeah, and you know the thing with her is that, you know, it just looks like that there's a lot of speed signed on, and both number three, Keeley's sister, and number seven, Command Strike, you know, look to be poised to, you know, perhaps be going at it in the early stages. You know, number three, Keeley's sister is going to have to work out a trip from the inside post if she doesn't make the lead.
The Secretary of State.
Yeah, Secretary of State, race three. And then in looking at race number six, that's the Senator Robert C. Byrd Memorial Stakes at 6 furlongs. Last time out at Prairie Meadows, I was on Macron in that Iowa sprint. That was my last second Friday play, won at 5.5-1. But one thing about that race, Steve, was that he had a perfect outside draw, I thought, with a bunch of speed to his inside. And I just thought he really, like, tripped out, got the perfect trip that day, earned his first stakes win. He comes back tomorrow in this stakes race at 7-5 on the morning line, draws an inside post. I think he could be up against it a little bit. I like number 7, Special Reserve. He's going to be a short price as well, but I think he's going to be the controlling speed off of the comebacker in the DeFrancis Dash Memorial. You know, he made the lead from an outside post that day and then came under a lot of pressure and weakened late, but he needed the race for Maker. Look for him to run well second time back. I'm single in Special Reserve in all late exotic races, exotic bets.
The 7 in the 6th, Special Reserve Santana in town for Mike Maker.
And then we have back-to-back Grade 3 stakes at Mountaineer tomorrow. There are two graded stakes of the year there at the West Chesterfield racetrack. And the Governor Stakes is held at a mile and a 16th. Number 2, Mr. Wireless, is going to scratch out of there. Clearly, number 4, Folsom, will take some beating in this spot. He's a graded stakes winner. But he is pretty much a one-run closer. Can be a little bit of a fodder at times. He's kind of leaving himself too much to do. I'm going to go with number 8, Derby House. I'm going to give him a slight edge. This horse can really has shown a really nice finishing kick while stepping up in class in his last couple starts. He stepped up again to the stakes level. And I like the fact he got a 105 Brisnet speed rating last time. Really on the upswing, this 4-year-old gelded son of Candy Ride for Juan Guerrero. He's 5-1 on the morning line. I'm giving number 8, Derby House, the edge in the Grade 3 Governors.
Nice.
And then in race number 8 is the West Virginia Derby. It's at a mile and an eighth. You know, you have some pace entered in this 7-horse field. I thought number 5, Cavassier, number 6, We the People. You know, they could be forward a little bit. Number 3, Homebrew, to me is, I thought last year, I watched that race on that opening weekend at Oaklawn, and Hammer probably saw it too, that he won convincingly. I thought he was going to be a potential Derby contender for Brad Cox this year. Something went wrong in that Smarty Jones. He spit the bit early, weakened to finish up the track. And I just think he was a horse that was easily forgotten in the interim. Came back, his Oaklawn Invitational Stakes on Derby Day at Oaklawn was okay, but he didn't meet much in that. And I thought he really took a big step forward last time in that Pegasus. I love the turn of foot he showed that day, Steve. He got a 124 late pace number from us and a 105 speed rating. I think he's a 3-year-old with more to offer. He's really coming on now. This is a time of year for these late, rapidly advancing 3-year-olds to shine. And I think he's going to be the third choice in the wagering behind We the People and Simplification. So I'm going with number 3, Homebrew, in the West Virginia Derby.
And, you know, we had that discussion with Marcus earlier, and he does feel like, the only reasonable alternative from a price standpoint. And I think, like, as you lay out, there's plenty of merit.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's Simplification and We the People have past races that could run this, but they are both coming off unplaced effort. And if they both just don't show up with their best, they could be vulnerable against, an improving horse like Homebrew. Turning to Saratoga, I'll give you a couple horses on Saturday I like real quick. In that race number 6, I'm really intrigued by number 3, Perform. It will be interesting to see if he gets bet down from 7-2 on the morning line for Shug McGahee. He's a $330,000 yearling purchase from the first crop of Good Magic, who appears to be coming on with some winners here recently. Really, I thought that was a heck of a good effort against Lost Oak. I thought he broke a half step slowly, rushed forward to contend the pace, got a little bit outpaced going into the far turn, and then he came again, drew almost even with Lost Oak at the top of the stretch, and he just came up a little bit short to Nest Half Brother. I think Lost Oak is a 2-year-old with a future. I love Perform. I love seeing 3 works in a 34-day interim for him. Shug's looking to win this race, and number 3, Perform, looks extremely tough to me in race 6 tomorrow at Saratoga.
Very good. There we go. 7-2 to start the bidding. Interesting to see Kendrick Carmouche aboard.
Yeah, and my other pick that I like is Cy Dog, number 8 in Saratoga Derby. Let me just say, that was an outstanding move he made last time. You know, he gets the second seed, like, in between calls, right passing the 16th hole in deep stretch. And then he just comes up a little bit short, but Manny Franco tried to go inside, then he tried to go outside, then he tried to go inside at the top of the stretch. Wasn't the cleanest of trips. This horse has a really dynamic turn of foot. He showed it in the Transylvania. He showed it in the Belmont Derby. He gets the right trip tomorrow, 12-1 on the morning line. He could at least hit the board at a price. I'm going to be using him, and I'll be using him in all vertical exotics. Number 8, Cy Dog in the Saratoga Derby.
You know, I ended up watching that race numerous times last night, that the Belmont Derby, because it seemed like there was a lot of stuff going on, and I agree with you that that he had a horrible trip, but I'm going to tell you, the horse that had the worst trip was Stone Age. Started wide, he's starting wide again, and he was wide, and when you're wide on a turn at Belmont, that's a long way to be wide. But in that first turn, he was wide. He got over to the rail. He never was comfortable, and he seemed like he was making a move on the turn, and it looked like he took a misstep or something. Everything went wrong, and then he comes on, and like a lot of just went flying at the end. That was going to be my, when we talked about that, Stone Age was going to be the one that I saw out of that race that just had the most horrible trip. And, you know, look for him to improve. But as I watched, the horse you just mentioned, Cy Dog, was another one that I was watching, too, and he was the one I ticked in the back of the head, too. But when I saw the 9-2 in the program on Stone Age, I was like, you know what, I'm sticking with this one. But I totally agree with you on the trip that the other one had, too. But if you get a shot, anybody, go watch that Belmont Derby. A lot of these coming back from there. Yeah. And the horse on the outside just had a horrible trip.
That's also the Beat Bic race for Saturday, and then we'll come back on Sunday with the De La Rose. But tomorrow, the 11th, is the Beat Bic. Get involved. I picked Nation's Pride, but it's a terrific, interesting group that the trips, as we saw, you know, as you're discussing, trips determine a lot of the outcome there. And then instead of using the Oaks on Sunday, which is a six-horse field, and it's fine, but it seems like the favorites are fairly clear and obvious, New Year's Eve and McCulloch. But the De La Rose has got a nice, interesting big group. So I went there, and ntra.com/NHC/BeatBic, and I'll send up the links if you haven't qualified yet for the September 17th final, and a seat in Vegas, and as well as a chance to not just represent the show, but to also win $1 million bonus in the NHC. James, as we go, the last second Friday push, the LSFP.
Yeah, number 10 Bee Catcher in race 7 at Del Mar this evening. His last two at longer distances set him up for a top showing today. 5-1 on the morning line for Dan Blacker, number 10 Bee Catcher in the 7th race at Del Mar.
We love it. There's James Scully, everybody. James_Scully111 and the Brisnet and Twin Spires team. The weekend preview presented, and we'll talk to James next week. James Scully, folks. Let's take the second break, second of two. Come back for hour three. We got a lot to do. Chuck Simon's going to touch base with his Hambletonian thoughts, and you know, the cross country thing. You know, the New York Gaming Commission rules prevent us from in New York from playing that the cross breed. It's unbelievable. Another insane rule from the Gaming Commission, but plenty of people will be betting the Hambo tomorrow. Papo Morales is going to join us. Dave Grenig just checked in. He can't come and sit with us, unfortunately, but he'll visit on the phone. And I think Turf Works are over, and Callie Francois was going to stop by. She had a couple of opinions for tomorrow here as well. She's exercise riding for it's her vacation, and she's exercise riding for Todd, and Jimmy's going to come back, right? Jimmy's supposed to come back as well, right?
Tara's over getting licensed.
Oh, very good. All right. So we got plenty to do. Hour three at the races. We're live at the Spa.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide,